Audio Drama Production Podcast Episode 42, Writing Dialogue, Episode Lengths, and a UK Audio Drama Meetup.
The Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. My name is Robert, you are...
Matthew, hello.
And our virtual home is audiodramaproduction.com. That's the introductions over with. An interview this week, Matthew, with Eli McElveen.
Yeah, the creator of Alba Salix, Royal Physician. Had Eli on the show a couple of weeks ago. I interviewed him, a wee chat about dialogue, which I thought deserved some attention. So will we fire into that without further ado?
Absolutely.
Hey, Matthew, it's Eli McElveen. And I'm the writer, director, sound designer of a comedy series called Alba Salix, Royal Physician. And yeah, thanks for having me. It's been really good listening to you. I guess it'll be, by the time this airs, it'll be 40 episodes.
Yeah, I think we're just past 40 now, Eli. That was 40 just past. So we're getting on. We're quite old.
But yeah, good
it's
work.
It's great to have you on. This is our second attempt. The first time we got our wires crossed. I don't know if it was it a 12-hour difference or that we ended up.
Oh, geez, yeah, something like that. Time zones have been the bane of my existence this month.
Yeah, it's not easy, especially when the clocks change and things like that as well. It makes it even more difficult. I'm sure there's an easy way of doing it, but it's not a way I'm familiar with. That's just manually for me. But we're here at last, and you know, we were chatting online, you and I, about what we could talk about, mm-hmm. and something that hasn't really had its own episode, if you like, on this podcast so far is the question of writing dialogue, writing good dialogue. So I think we'll just start. You know, I made some notes myself, and I'm just thinking about, you know, what defines dialogue, and because, you know, you're using dialogue in audio drama to replace facial expressions, body language, arm and hand gestures. You could consider it your makeup artist, your costume designer, your lighting. So, Eli, how would you go about defining good dialogue in audio drama?
Oh, geez, that's a good one. Just does it evoke what you're after? And it depends on the tone of your show too, because like I had always, when I started out, I was very into like very naturalistic dialogue, like putting in every and pause and break and interruption, and you know that's really tiring to read, and it's a lot of work for. If you're just reading prose or if it's an actor trying to make any kind of sense of it, to just get in your head and go, what the heck was he thinking when he wrote this? Yeah. And at the total other end of that spectrum, there's very scripted, very tight dialogue where everyone's got, you know, the perfect response to something or, the perfect line, the one liners. And then I like to sort of be somewhere in the middle these days.
That's an interesting point you make about sort of the ums and ahs. And, you know, I think I'm quite guilty of that when I'm writing. You know, I really, really micromanage how I want it to sound.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Is it something that, because again, you're going to get different kinds of actors who, you do get an actor who, even if you make a very obvious mistake in the script, is just so focused on reading it that we'll just read out the mistake, you know, kind of yep. Anchorman style. Whereas you'll get some other actors who might even vary for the script a wee bit. I suppose, you know, it's down to your actors and how much freedom you give them, and do they have permission to sort of break up your lines, maybe pause a wee bit, maybe add something in and improvise. So I suppose there's that to consider as well, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. And then you can go sort of the route, the Jonathan Mitchell route. It was really cool hearing from him because he's got basically the exact opposite approach from me. Like I tend to script the heck out of things, and to hear from someone that's doing it in this very improvised fashion is really cool.
Yeah, it's a really really interesting way of doing it, really effective if, you know, obviously you do need the location, you do need the actors and things like that. So,
yeah, the results are great. I'm a big fan of The Truth, so.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I've always said in the past, the first time I heard The Truth, I was like, I wonder what the script looks like, because that's just mad. You know, it sounds real. But that's because it was. So how do we find, if we're assuming, you know, and you touched on this, that we're looking for somewhere in the middle, as you put it, how do we find the balance between realism and dialogue that ultimately works and contributes to furthering and telling your story?
Yeah, I think that depends on the tone of your show. Like with Alba, I just got off it from it for a different project where I was trying to write a more like a more modern day. It was kind of a comedy adventure science fiction show that didn't quite fly, and decided to kind of change direction and went in this very it has the feel of a sitcom a little bit. There's the dialogue is a little bit over the top. It's very one-linery, or at least a little bit stagey, I guess. So yeah, characters will occasionally just blurt out a bit of exposition or something like that, and it's the kind of the tone of the show lets you get away with that. There's a bit of a kind of a wink and a nod that yeah, this isn't the real world. It's a fairy tale, and people just sometimes tell each other exactly what they're thinking or exactly what's going on. I'm working on scripts for another series now that is more of a comedy adventure again, and the tone there is a little more realistic, and so you're not going to be able to get away with that kind of dialogue quite so much.
As someone who writes a lot of sort of humorous scripts and humorous lines, do you find it hard to get away from that? Do you find if you ever try and write something completely serious that is always just going to creep in? You know, it's unavoidable, if you like.
Yeah, I need my comedy. Like I need my laughs, even in something that is totally serious. If a show hasn't, you know, made me laugh in some way, it doesn't have to be jokey or anything like that. Just let me see that the characters have a sense of humor, and then I'm on board with them, basically. I think it really helps to kind of give some range. If there are lighter moments, then those really help you kind of sell the more dramatic moments. You know, you need to earn the really dramatic portions of your script, I think. And part of the way that dramas do that for me, at least, is through comedy. It makes the characters more human, really. I mean, it's a coping mechanism in some people. And so if they're in a really, really grim situation and one of them just cracks a joke, it can be a lousy joke, but it lightens the mood and it lets you know what kind of, you know, what kind of stress they're under and what kind of people they are.
It's a good point as well, because if you think about, like, you know, if we do have like a horror or very serious action drama, mm-hmm. But it still has some sort of humorous comedy moments where maybe the characters are kicking back a wee bit at a point and they're having a laugh, and ultimately you want your listener to care about your characters, and if you never do that, you know, when it comes to the crunch and these characters' lives are at risk, why should the listener care about them? Whereas if, like you say, they've shown their human side, you're more likely to have that listener on side with you.
Totally, totally. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Joss Whedon and his work, and he blends the two very nicely, I think. I just saw Cabin in the Woods again, and it's like way, way darker movie than I would ever watch usually, but it was so damn hilarious that I just couldn't stop.
Yeah, I liked that. I saw it a few years ago. It kind of threw me because I didn't expect to... I didn't expect it to be like anything like what it was, if that makes mm-hmm. any sense at
oh,
all.
Oh yeah, it was that kind of movie.
Hadn't read the synopsis. Just thinking about, you know, when you sit down to write dialogue, how much background preparation have you got, especially, you know, if you're dealing with new characters or when you started writing your current series and you didn't really know these characters well, did you find it really challenging to get the dialogue going? And is that something that almost writes itself now?
It's definitely a big challenge starting out with new characters, and I don't know who these people are, and it takes a while for them all to kind of snap into focus. A trick that I know a lot of people use is to kind of cast the characters in their mind, so they've got either people that they know or like famous actors, whoever it is, just so that they know kind of what the words are going to sound like coming out of someone's mouth eventually. And I did that for the new series. There's a character as like this old grumpy old alien, I just couldn't get his lines to work. And then I started, thinking he sounded a bit like William S. Burroughs. I don't know if you know what he sounds like. He's got this sort of gravelly voice, and he could get away with saying the weird kinds of things that I had this character saying, and it was like, okay, I think I got him now.
When you're sort of planning a scene, I mean, you'll probably know what you want to get out of that particular scene. Have you ever encountered a situation where you want to get to that end point, but because you get to know the characters so well, you're trying to write the dialogue and you feel like you're almost forcing them down a certain avenue that, you know, and you get to the point where you think they just wouldn't say that, or, you know, they'd counter with this, and then you get to the point where the scene's just running on and on. Is that something that's ever troubled you at all?
Oh, for sure, yeah. Yeah, it's the classic, oh, my characters are running away with the script kind of moment. And yeah, I think at that point you got to step back and go, okay, they don't really have the right motivation. Otherwise, they would be wanting to go that direction on their own. So I think at that point you step back in the script of a few pages or find reasons that they might want to go the direction the script is going. Yeah, you sort of have to make peace with the fact that you've got to tell your characters what to do, or maybe not tell them what to do, but make them want to do what you want them to do.
Yeah, even force them if you have to create something that's going to force them to
sometimes
go down
the route. Yeah.
Just sort of touching on something you mentioned earlier on as well. It's something Robert and I have looked at quite closely recently, and we sort of, if ever we're watching the TV or a film or something like that, not together because we don't live together, but we often, you know, just listen to the dialogue. And what we were talking about quite recently was how short and snappy televised and film dialogue often is. And in the past, we've been very guilty of trying to further the plot quite a lot in each scene by throwing out these huge chunks of dialogue, you know, big paragraphs. Is that something that you'd done in the past as well? Is it something you've tried to sort of cut down?
Not so much. I think, like, I naturally tend to write conversations. And my own writing, I don't find myself just layering in loads of explanations and exposition. So there's a little part of my brain going, they're talking too much. Someone's going to interrupt them. But the flip side of that is that if one character is just asking a whole bunch of questions, and then they're kind of doing the same thing where they're just interviewing the other character. And I guess in an editing pass or something like that later on, you can make it more organic so that their side of the conversation is like they've got a reason to be in the scene and, you know, concerns of their own. They're not just there to to be the straight man to the other character, if that makes sense.
Have you found as well, and again, this is something that's came up recently on the podcast, that a lot of producers are talking about avoiding just having conversations taking place without, you know, the plot being furthered or the characters doing anything. So do you try and intersperse conversations with actually going somewhere or making something or fixing something, and just maybe interrupting the flow of the dialogue with some dialogue to do with the task that they're carrying out, just to add that element of realism?
Yeah, yeah. That can really help kind of ground the scene, and otherwise it's just people talking in an empty room or an empty field or something. Yeah, if they're doing something else, it's a kind of a classic writing trick to give them a task, or they're driving a car or something, and maybe they'll throw out some lines about what's happening around them.
Always like in the X-Files, you know, when Mulder and Scully get sent like hundreds of miles to investigate something, and then they're driving in the car and it cuts to the scene and they're nearly at this destination, like they've driven for hundreds of miles, and then suddenly they're having the conversation that they definitely would have had within like the first mile.
Right. You know,
they drove all the way there and then they're like, right, let's iron this out now. And you're thinking, like, I know it's fiction, but you're thinking, I think you might have mentioned this before now, to be honest. What have you been talking about for the last 4 hours?
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's something you can catch when you're rereading it or giving it to someone else to have a look. Having another pair of eyes on your script is kind of vital, because they will catch tons and tons of things that you didn't the first time, and like logical inconsistencies, and well, wouldn't he have just figured that out beforehand or brought the whatchamacallit with him?
Yeah, that, I mean, myself, like Robert and I, you know, we've got the benefit of working together, so when we've wrote a script, we'll sit down on Skype probably and we'll just read the script out, you know, play every other character, if you like, and mm-hmm. just it helps just to hear the script out loud, and you can correct a lot of errors. But as far as I know, Eli, you sort of work and write on your own, don't you? So how do you deal with that? Do you just read the whole thing out loud before you finalize it, or?
I tend to be testing it out and just quietly to myself here and there. But also, there, you know, I have my partner who I give scripts to all the time and say, what do you think of this? And again, another couple friends who I run things by. One of them's more of a writer, and one of them is has a very logical mind and can spot any of the inconsistencies in the plot or the character.
Yeah, it always helps to have that second pair of eyes. You do get so desensitized to these things when you've been working on them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just cannot pick anything out after a while. So it definitely helps doing that. Just to sort of wrap things up then, let's just sort of, you know, what are ways that we can advise people that you know, are getting into audio drama if they're looking at writing dialogue? What are some of the pieces of advice you could give? I mean, for example, a thing that I've heard quite a lot in the past is that you can record, you know, with your phone in a public place, just record real-life dialogue. It's probably not legal, but, you know, just on a bus or whatever, if you record a conversation on your phone, take it home and transcribe it and look at how that conversation looks, because it's natural. People won't be finishing their sentences. People keep digressing, and probably the original point of the person speaking, you know, they never arrive. And that's obviously probably too real for most dramas where you're further in the plot along, but it's just getting that sort of visual representation of what a real conversation looks like and going forward with that in the writing process might help, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Listening to the way actual people talk, like it's good to kind of go through your favorite shows or your favorite books and see what kinds of lines you like, but going back to the way people actually talk is just vital. And listening to people in public is great. Listening to people in your family or your circle of friends, but also, like, I think as writers, we're living in kind of a golden age of research, because, you know, with Wikipedia and books available online, you've got a window into all kinds of things. And as well, we've got podcasts and YouTube and Twitter and all these other venues where you can just take a peek into the world of people from like all kinds of a zillion different cultures and subcultures and find out what really, what matters to them, what they love, what they hate, and how they talk about it and how they use language. So I've, yeah, I follow a wide variety of people online just to see where they're at and how they sound.
Eli, it's been great to talk. And just before we wrap up there, what you got to promote at the moment? What are you up to?
At the moment, a lot of stuff is sort of in the works, like this new series that we're hoping to get scripts done later this year. Another more nebulous series that's less of a drama and more of a, I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of an alternate history told in sound bites. So that's sort of really in the works. Some other writing, but for now you can hear what we've been working on at albasalix.com. It's 6-part comedy with possibly more episodes on the way. It's a fairy tale medical show, and 6-part comedy, and yeah, sorry, I'm rambling here. You can find that at albasalix.com, albasalix.com.
Thanks very much to Eli McElveen for that very interesting interview about dialogue. Some hints and tips there for us all. So let's look now towards what we were talking about on last week's episode, Matthew, a potential meetup for all folk that like audio and drama and the likes.
Yeah, since the last episode, there's been a lot of good feedback on this on social media, and we also have a survey up and running now. Just a wee heads up to Damien de Groot. He got in touch by email. He said, "Thanks for the favourable mention. I'd love to come to an audio drama event in the UK, by the way. It would be fantastic." And by the sounds of it, many people agree with him, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It seems to have gotten a much better reaction early doors than we'd expected. We thought we would have to build this up very slowly, but already people are saying, yeah, we could do this, we could do that. A lot of different points to cover. So I guess that brings us to the survey that you mentioned.
Yeah, well, I think it was important to get a gauge of sort of what people were interested in attending and where they were interested in going to as well. So we put a survey together, and the links to this will be in the show note. And it's really vital that if you're at all interested in possibly attending this, that you fill the survey in. It's very, very short. I think there's only 5 questions, some of which are comment boxes, which you don't even have to put anything in if you don't want to. So the important points really were finding out where people were based, where they live, and places that they would find convenient, if you like, to attend. I just wanted to mention, because I left Edinburgh and London off there, and a lot of people, because there's a wee box underneath that you can put suggestions. Yeah. So I'm getting loads of people writing Edinburgh and loads of people writing London. Now, as far as I'm concerned, they both cancel each other out. I think there's like 9 saying Edinburgh, 9 saying London. I love both places. I'd really like to go to both places, but it's just not feasible to take a lot of people from one to the other. I think it's much fairer if we look at somewhere, you know, the top of England or the middle of England. It's much easier for everyone to get to. And that's what we're looking for, is somewhere that's accessible for everyone.
And somewhere on a main train route seemed to be popular as well. So ease of access, we're looking at Manchester, Birmingham, Newcastle, somewhere like that, not somewhere that's completely off the beaten track, you know, like the west coast of Wales or anywhere. We're not going to be doing that. The event size itself, we're not quite sure. We imagine we're trying to start small, aren't we, really, and then build up as much as we think people want. We don't want to put on a huge event only to have 8 people turn up and have a running cost of £10,000.
Yeah, well, you think about starting out with these things, and you know, you could have huge, huge plans, but the bottom line is getting people to attend, getting people through the door. That, for me, is the important thing in the first year, is to make sure that people turn up. there is a lot of support on the survey so far for having sessions and speakers and even activities. That's by far the most popular vote in the survey. You know, I'm not averse to that. I just think that you do have to be realistic. There's some comments, which we'll get to in a minute, some comments from the survey that we'll read out. And one of them I really do agree with. I'm just looking for it just now. It says, please make the price as low as possible.
Yeah.
So many of these events I can't go to due to the pricing being very high. And that's, you know, that really matters to me. I really want it to be something that's affordable. No one's going to make any money off it. It'll just be money, you know, if we charge a ticket price, it'll be used to hire the facility, to put on some food and pay expenses of any speakers if necessary. So people need to understand that the bigger the event, the more it's going to cost, and also the more people have to get involved in organising it, because certainly I don't think you and I have the time or resources to be up here in Fife and organise something down in England. It'd be quite difficult to do that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we're not looking to have the next Comic-Con overnight, you know, or Glastonbury, that size of event. We're not going to be booking Stephen Fry, a well-known voice actor at times, to come and speak for a small fee of £5,000. It's not going to be like that at all. We're going to invite as many varied people as we can that we think will be relevant to it. And this is really about reaching out and meeting our fellow professionals, or aspiring professionals, shall we say.
I mean, speaking personally, and we'll all get the chance to put our own personal opinions into the survey. Personally, for me, based on a lot of events we've attended in the past, Robert, I just find sessions really difficult. Again, this is a personal thing. I can't sit still.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have we went to stuff in Glasgow and I've disappeared off to the bar within half an hour of the first session? I can't sit still. I hate sitting down. I'd much rather be up and about and meeting people, and understand there is a balance. A good example of that, I think, was the UK Podcasters Conference that we went to last year. They had a great mix of sessions and networking, so you were always meeting people and chatting and getting to stand up and have a wee drink in that as well. So
yeah, any sessions, any if we do get someone to speak, it won't be for an hour. You know, it won't be for an hour at all. It'll be 20 minutes and then let's interact. I don't even know what kind of numbers we're looking at here so far, but a smallish room that's full of like-minded people. Let's all have a chat. Let's make it interactive. The more interactive it is, the more we're going to get out of it. And it's going to be relevant. Some of the things you were talking about when you in particular, and I'm guilty of it as well, leaving halfway through or just missing out sessions, it's because it wasn't relevant to us a lot of the time.
Sometimes I think people, when they organise these events, and I understand it must be hugely difficult, but it seems to me that sometimes people create sessions for the sake of creating sessions.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it would have to be something really relevant and interesting that merited getting all these people who've travelled quite a distance and paid some money to sit down and listen to somebody. When it's, I would say, much more valuable to be up and about, meeting people, making connections, making friends, and possibly talking about collaborations in the future. That, to me, is what's attractive about an event. But again, I stress that that's a personal opinion, and you'll get the chance to give your feelings if you take the survey.
Yeah, maybe you're the sort of person that likes to sit back for an hour and have a lecture given to you so that you can absorb the information. Some people are like that, not me personally, but we should certainly listen to public opinion. So we'll look at some of the comments so far from other people as well about what they're looking for.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, Wireless Theatre, Big Finish, Dirk Maggs, these have all been touted as potential speakers. I'd be very happy to get in touch with them to see what they're saying. And there's also former interviewee of ours, Richard Hand, and other audio drama reference book authors. I've made a note here. You know, like the times we've been at uni, there's been a lot of different books we've looked at. Maybe we could get in touch with more of these people and say, hey, do you want to come along and talk about what you've written in your book, the topics that drive you? Maybe sell a few copies, or potentially.
I think as well, like on that subject, somebody like Lawrence Raw, if he was in the country, very mm-hmm. interesting guy. And you never know who, you know, if the event does go ahead, and again, there's no guarantee, it's only talk at this stage. If somebody was maybe coming over from the States, you know, a producer then if they're coming at a real far distance, or even somebody coming along from Europe, and they were interested in doing a wee talk, I'm sure that would be really valuable as well. So those are all options, certainly, going forward.
Yeah, and we were looking at booths or pods or rooms with speakers where people can showcase their own audio dramas. Potentially one where people book in advance and one that's turn up if there's a free slot type of affair. What do you think of that? That's interesting.
Again, a really good suggestion. As always, it's just about the logistics and the organisation of these things, and not necessarily how easy it is to do, because nothing's going to be too easy. If you want something to be good, that's not the attitude to take. But at the same time, it does need to be practical, and we do need the, you know, we do need help. We do need people on board. So there's that to consider.
What do you think of the idea? I'm just throwing this out there, that people are invited to make a 5-minute drama, and then we showcase as many as people offer. You know, if it's only 5 minutes, it's not going to take up the whole of the day. We could have a listen to something and then discuss it afterwards for a couple of minutes. What's good, what's bad, something like that.
Again, I'm open to all ideas. It just is everything. It comes down to time and practicality and attendance, and not just creating an activity for creating an activity's sake. As long as it's something that people want and that we're willing to execute, then yeah, it could be a goer.
And a couple of the other points here, food and drink would be awesome, absolutely. I'm sure that's something we can look at with a local caterer, is put something on that caters for the numbers when we know what they are. Definitely, if we're going to be there all day, we have to have something, don't we? And as you said before, making the price low, price and cost, that's a big issue, obviously.
Yeah, that's something I'm very passionate about. And, you know, as long as we're involved and as long as it's taking place, I would definitely repeat the fact that no one will be making any profit from it. It'll be used, you know, all money will be used for the event, and we don't want to be charging a lot for it. But, you know, that does come down to, if people want a big event, then it will cost more. There are other ways to keep ticket prices down, possibly, like selling tables or wee stalls to production houses where they could promote their work, sell CDs, books, etc. So there's wee ways, again, that you could probably, what's the word?
Remunerate, or make it financially viable, or self-sufficient.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Put that thesaurus away.
I'd also made a note here about, rather than a conference hall, because I was on the interwebs having a look at different things, like Travelodge conference rooms and stuff, and it can be expensive. Like, they want £50 per delegate, some of them. And it's like, no, I'd rather meet in the park,
yeah,
you know, than pay that. We could look at a pub with a function room, if it was a fairly upbeat kind of pub, you know, if the numbers fitted. Obviously, if we got 100 people, which I think we'd be asking a bit much at this point, but if we did, then yeah, we'd get somewhere fitting. I guess I'm just adding to what we're saying, is that whatever we do will be cost effective and relevant to the amount of people we're going to get.
Yeah, so in summary, we need your opinions. Get on the show notes, get on the survey and fill that out. We also, you know, if it's going to take place, we're going to need volunteers. Mr. Tony Lunn, famous Tony himself, he's involved. So, we're going to need a few people. We're going to need a few pairs of hands, aren't we? So
yeah,
get involved.
Yep, and you can do that by emailing us at podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. So elsewhere, Mr. Matthew...
A couple of wee thanks to people on Twitter. So thanks to Syntax Podcast for the kind words over there. Hi to JD Sutter, who I think it's Sutter, actually. Sorry, JD, I always get your name wrong. I think it's JD Sutter.
I think so, but I've never wanted to say.
Right.
Just in case I'm wrong.
I think, because I remember I asked him and he said it sounds like butter, but with an S. Sutter. So JD, thanks. He actually got in touch to say that he could be the latest audio drama producer to get involved with VoiceMap, because he heard us mention it on the show. So that's another audio drama producer getting involved over there. Does that mean we're trailblazers?
Definitely, because that's one of the latest, because there's a number of them. I mean, three's a number. No, there's been a few folk that have said, yeah, we're looking into that as well. So it could be that we're leading the way.
Yeah, like we do with clothes and Fife.
We're dedicated followers of fashion. Yeah, that's for sure. And
let me get this one right then. Yeah. Gracias to Tio in Barcelona. Tio got in touch on Twitter. ¿Cómo se dice en español Twitter? That means, how do you say it in Spanish? Because quiero hablar bien español. That means, I want to speak good Spanish. But lo siento, pero mi español es mal means, I'm sorry, my Spanish is very bad. So Teo actually produces an audio drama in Spanish. So I'm going to listen to that and it will help me to learn the language a bit better.
It's interesting that you could say that a little bit of Spanish there, but you can't say Sutter.
Yeah.
I have to say.
Well,
but, you know.
Being multilingual has its setbacks, because everyone's waiting for you to trip up and make a mistake.
And then go, look at you, you can say this, but you can't say that. It's like you're fallible or something.
Wee thanks to Owen McEwen as well. He had some nice things to say on Twitter. And just before we recorded there, Stories of Mahabharata, I always get that right now. Mm-hmm. They got in touch to thank us because they're featured on the Sonic Society this week.
I saw that, yes.
Yeah, he said it was because he'd heard Jack Ward on this very podcast, and he was saying thanks for connecting us, so that's nice. Good. I'm glad that you're featured there, Nat. I really look forward to hearing it.
Elsewhere, thanks go to Christian of the Once and Future Nerd for mentioning us as one of his favourite podcasts on the website Porno Kitsch.
Yeah, and that's not a porn site, by the way. It's a completely 100% safe for work website with a very deceiving name. Because I must admit, when I saw the tweet and I saw the link, I was like, oh, I see. You found this crazy picture of me, have you?
But,
no, it's it actually is a legitimate and very good website. So big thanks to Christian. That was really nice of him to include us in there.
Yeah, cheers. And lastly, this was last night when I think you were probably asleep on the website. You weren't asleep on the website. But,
on the couch.
Yeah. Ty Nelson from Joliet, Illinois, United States. He joined the group and he immediately got involved. A topic we've covered before, but we'll mention it here briefly. He says, first off, thanks for the ad. I've been working my way through the episodes and also read the book. I'm looking to get into producing and I have a question. How long should an episode be? I'm leaning towards the 15 to 20 minute range, but wondering if 30 minutes is more acceptable. It'll be interesting to hear what you guys have to say about this. So there's been a few comments on that thread since then. I was saying, you know, 20 minutes they reckon is the average commute. If you're going to go as far as an hour, you maybe want to split it into two. At the end of the day, it's really up to you. It's what you want. Are you catering for commuting needs, or are you catering purely for the story? If your story is a solid 45 minutes and there's not a bit you would take out, keep it as it is, I would say. And then there was somebody else on there at the death there last night, I think, saying either under 5 minutes or over 30 minutes, which seemed like a wildly varying range. But I meant to ask them, actually, and I've forgotten the person's name. I meant to ask what the justification was for that, because I bet there'll be something interesting.
Yeah, everyone's got their views. I mean, certainly my personal views on this are just to write the story, write the script, and don't worry about it, you know, as long as it's nothing extreme, like a 4-hour story or that. But, I mean, look, I take the point about commuting times. I take that point, but you're never going to get that right. People are always getting interrupted. People's commutes do wildly vary.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry too much about that, whether it's a 5-minute story or a 50-minute story, just however long your script is. And if that script's adequate and the story's engaging, people are always going to come back to it. If they have to put it off to go to work, they come back. Technology's advanced enough that doesn't trouble us.
Yeah, media players, they know where you are in the story. I mean, there's an episode of something on one of the providers, like Stitcher, and I know if I go back to that thing now, it will remember I'm 36 minutes and 15 seconds into it.
Yeah, I mean, you get audiobooks that are 3 hours, you get audiobooks that are 30 hours, and commuting time has nothing to do with that. You just continue it until you're finished, so.
Yeah. If anything, it goes on to another point, is that it can be any length you want, as long as you haven't got any rubbish in there that should be taken out, any leftover waste, you know, any any stuff where you're just rambling on, get that out, get it as precise a product. But I would say that about any story.
I suppose my closing point on the matter would be that, you know, if it's a series, you will want to have realistic lengths. Otherwise, you're going to be months and months between episodes. So, yeah, 15 to 20 minutes is probably quite a sweet spot for that.
And it's about finding the natural stopping point. You don't want the episode to end when they're in the middle of a cup of tea. You know, you want it to be when, oh my gosh, who's that at the window? It's dun 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 credits, you know?
Finally, I was listening to the School of Podcasting with Dave Jackson, former guest on the show. I was listening to his podcast this morning. He was talking about NMX, the big get-together in Las Vegas. And he featured a short interview with the guy behind the app Clamr, C-L-A-M-M-R. And this actually sounds really, really interesting. The guy's kind of marketing it as a Twitter or an Instagram for audio, and people could basically cut small segments of their favourite podcasts, or in our case, audio dramas, and they can put this into a feed so their friends and people with similar interests, I'd imagine you'll have the old hashtags and things like that, can scroll down this news feed and just play these very short segments of different podcasts, or again, in our case, audio dramas. And that means that when you're on the lookout for new content, you can actually find these wee segments that kind of engage you, and then you could go into that and you can listen to the full episode if you want, or if you don't think very much of it, you just scroll past it. So that sounds really interesting, Robert, doesn't it?
What a fabulous idea that is, eh? Because, yeah, we're always looking for new content. I'll maybe find something, or the name of something, and I think, well, that might be something I'm interested in looking at. So I click on one link, it takes me to another page, and then I click on another link and it takes me to the website, the home page, which is huge and 7 years old. And then I've got to scroll down to find episode one, blah, blah, blah. And by the time I've done all that and I listen to it and I think, nah, it's not for me. And I've wasted 20 odd minutes.
Yeah.
If only I could have just heard a trail of it, much like the one you've just talked about. Fantastic. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, so we'll put links to both Clamr, the website itself, and Dave Jackson's show, that particular episode there, in the show notes as well. And on that note, are we done here?
I believe so. The weather's fine, at least it is here in Scotland, and why wouldn't it be?
You know, we're going to record outside again today. We're at my house, and it's a really, really nice day. And if you listened to the episode a couple of weeks ago, we were in the middle of recording and the local authority turned up to cut the grass, naturally, as happens when we record a podcast.
All six vehicles and for one street of grass.
But they actually turned up yesterday, and I knew we were recording the podcast today, so I was quite happy. I thought, well, that's the grass cut. What can possibly go wrong? Got up today, really nice day, really still, would have been perfect for recording outside. And I mean, this town, the population of, what, 50,000? The town down the road's got 150,000, probably.
Yeah.
So out of all this area, the entirety of the roads department turned up on the road, literally outside the window of my house. For the first time ever, they're actually replacing a streetlight. And I've never seen that happen, ever.
Replacing a streetlight?
I've never, ever seen a streetlight.
I think
replaced.
It's MI5 and they're spying on you. They keep coming up with reasons to be in the street.
Yeah. So that thing that never, ever happens happened right outside. In fact, it's happening now, probably. So for that reason, we were forced indoors, which is a shame because in Scotland, you know, any time it's sunny, you have to be outside because you don't get that much of it.
Semi-naked. 12 degrees, loving it. That's centigrade, by the way. We're indoors, but we're going to go out now, aren't we, and enjoy the sunshine.
Yeah, take a cup of tea in the garden, like the posh gentleman I am.
Yes. I would say to one and all, if you have any ideas, thoughts, suggestions about this meetup in 2016, get in touch with us. Do it on the Facebook group, do it at the email address, podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. You'll find us on Twitter, Instagram, yada, yada, yada. Google is your friend. Do you know what Google's unofficial motto is?
No.
Don't be evil.
Good.
I saw that the other
day.
Fine
motto.
I thought, I've got to share that, especially with Google.
Irony.
Yeah.
Yeah, have a great week and fill out the survey. And if I catch any of you writing Edinburgh or London in that wee box, I'm going to say really nasty things about you on social media.
Cornwall. So. John O'Groats. Denmark.
Yeah, right.
Somewhere in the middle of England somewhere. That'll be fine. Somewhere on a main train route. That's what we're looking for. Come on, be helpful. Help us to help you to help us to help you.
Okay, todo bien. That concludes the Spanish lesson as well. That means all good. And on that note, adios, amigos y amigas.
Keep your feet on the ground.